This week, the summer doldrums hit the markets with a vengeance. Welcome, everybody. It's time for another big show with your host, Chris Waltzek, here. What is that McMansion really worth? You know, the one that your significant other texted you from the iPhone? How can we really be sure what that dream house is actually worth? After all, most of us are gun-shy after the 2008 housing smackdown. Plus, online websites regularly inflate the price. Part of this is due to just ignoring local externalities that can impact the true value. In this week's listener Q&A segment, I outline a quick rule of thumb that anyone can memorize to determine the fair value of almost any home. It might just be the ammunition you need to avoid buying that overpriced debt trap or to find that rare gold nugget in the cul-de-sac. Next, gold and silver remain under pressure for several years running, but what better portfolio insurance is out there? When every other asset fails, gold and silver-lined lifeboats save the day. And given Dr. Ron Paul's latest video where he claims millions of investors are unprepared for the coming financial maelstrom, it's time for portfolio insurance. Then two big guests join the show. Louis Navalier insists that stock picking in strong sectors is the only way to go here, such as technology, healthcare, and related sectors. He shares several of his favorite stocks, including CVS and Lowe's Home Improvement. Peter Schiff smacks a grand slam over the center field wall with his gold digital currency. It's the gold-backed Bitcoin du jour. His partnership with the Perth Mint in Australia guarantees minimal fees, and it offers geographic diversification, a most overlooked but important portfolio tool. And a small public service announcement. Do you also have a weak spot for pets? You know, rescue services do so much to end suffering and also to bring joy to many people and animals. If you're inclined, please click the donate button at this site. Any contribution will help. WNC Animal Rescue.org, WNC animalrescue.org. And we'd like for you to record your questions and comments. Our new hotline 24/7. You can leave your first name or stay anonymous if you like. 1-206-6665-370. Goldseek.com radio begins now with the market recapitulation. Partly cloudy skies appeared over the New York COMEX exchange this week. The precious metals suffered somewhat amid more hawkish than expected comments from key Fed governors. The yellow metal was off, though only 27, about 2%, finishing at 1173 an ounce. Silver fell just 31 cents, about 2%, ending the week at 1573 an ounce. The XAU gold and silver equities ended off only 2 points, about 3% at 6470, while West Texas Intermediate crude ended near the break-even point, around $60 a barrel. I see a potential trade in this market, and I offer a leveraged ticker symbol for all my alpha subscribers this weekend. I'll share entry and exits in this week's Alpha Stocks newsletter. So if you haven't joined already, please sign up. Moving on, the top story impacting the precious metals sector this week, the strong U.S. dollar amid robust domestic economic reports. On Friday, a government report indicated that U.S. consumption is solid. Consumer sentiment climbed in June. Investors adjusted expectations on higher lending rates on the heels of hawkish comments from key Fed governors. Recently, two Fed officials, John Williams and Jerome Powell, expressed their hawkish rate epistemologies, indicating the first increase in the benchmark lending rate since 2008 will likely occur in September and the second in December. The comments sent the U.S. dollar soaring this week, which promptly closed at the highest point in 3 weeks. Analysts at leading investment bank Goldman Sachs reconfirmed earlier comments that the U.S. dollar and the euro would trade at parity before next year, suggesting continued greenback strength. Elsewhere, news that China could soon back the yuan with gold in a bid to rival the greenback as the global reserve currency and entice global currency inflows hit the streets. The U.S. dollar became the de facto currency after World War II when it adopted the gold standard. But since 1971, the gold standard was abandoned, making it a fiat currency. Some analysts suggest that officials are attempting to follow those footsteps with the yuan, which made the dollar the must-hold currency for about 70 years. The central bank is expected to sign off on the proposal next week. Current guesstimates regarding the national stockpile of gold in their country, roughly 3,000 to 10,000 tons. That's quite a range. Of course, it depends on the actual figure, but one media source suggested that at least 10,000 tons would be required to back the currency. As they procure that over many years, could send gold into the ionosphere. But when all this might happen, well, that remains a wild card for now. Precious metals bottom line. For the time being, the dollar remains in charge, but still the precious metal sector is must-have security for portfolio diversification. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, partly cloudy skies also appeared over the New York Stock Exchange. Investors were unnerved somewhat by the prospect of higher rates amid less than sanguine comments from Fed chiefs. Higher rates typically lowers the competitiveness of U.S. equities, dividends, and tends to curtail corporate expansion and prospects. The Dow Jones Industrials Average ended off about 70 points, finishing at 17,947. Under that 18,000 psychologically significant level, the S&P 500 ended near the break-even point, though, around 2101, off only 8 points, and the NASDAQ finished down 37, falling from a new bull market high first, ending down sharply at 50.80. Elsewhere, the latest deadline for officials in Greece to accept the economic reform agreement with creditors ahead of the Tuesday IMF debt payment deadline hit the headlines. Gold prices edged higher as the Greek prime minister met with its creditors and Angela Merkel and French President François Hollande on Friday, ahead of a Saturday negotiations to stave off a default of the upcoming $1.7 billion debt payment. A stalemate over debt restructuring continues, though, amid the discussions with EU finance ministers regarding a bailout. There is considerable rancor over the debt drama. Hardline Northern European officials see little progress, while other officials are calling for more leniency to hold the shaky union together. Nevertheless, word on the street indicates that the creditors are planning to extend the debt repayment for several months, giving the Greeks time to formulate a coherent plan of action. In equities news, shares of Nike, the athletic apparel company, reported strong earnings. The gain helped boost the Dow Industrials. And after soaring for months in the past 2 weeks, China Stock Exchange crashed about 20% over the last 2 weeks, with ticker PEK, that's an ETF, and FXI off sharply. Rumors include government plans to slow the massive rally. The Shanghai Composite was off 20% since June 12th. Evaporating over $1 trillion in market cap. Still, the selling appears, I think, overdone and might present an interesting rebound opportunity similar to what we saw with the greenback for more fleet-footed investors and those that would like to increase foreign exposure in their portfolios. Bottom line on Wall Street, investor fear levels remain somewhat elevated for the third week running, according to our favorite 7-indicator sentiment index, but not yet quite signaling a bottom. We're not seeing a panic selling yet. The combination, I think, of dovish Fed and solid economic numbers, though, should put a floor in the market sometime over the next few weeks. And coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with listeners Q&A, plus Louis Navalier and Peter Schiff. We'd like for you to stay with us right here. Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, located at schiffgold.com, author of several bestsellers, and he is doing video logs and a radio host and wearing a lot of hats right now. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Thanks for having me back, Chris.
Gold recorded its best move in a month last week. You know, we had the Fed meeting announcement, a key date for the interest rate. That's a shift in guidance, you know, away from the extended period talk we'd heard in earlier meetings. It looks like a rate hike in about 3 months. You're on record saying, who cares? We know this. It's one and done likely. Tell us what's going on here.
Well, look, I've been saying for a long time that I don't believe the Fed really has any intention of raising rates. And if they do so, it's only because they feel they're backed into a corner and they have to raise them, you know, ceremoniously But they're going out of their way to say that even if we raise interest rates, don't worry about it because we're not likely to raise them again anytime soon. And if we do, it's going to be by a tiny amount. So it's really like they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. They're trying to raise rates without raising rates because the Fed recognizes that this bubble will pop if they actually raise rates to a level that the markets believe. And so they have to, dial back those expectations in order to ultimately save face. I believe they're probably not going to raise rates at all. But we'll see. I mean, they may, bow down to some pressure and have like a trivial, superficial kind of rate hike just so they can say they did it, but then do everything they can to say they're not going to do it again, which really undercuts the significance of the rate hike in the first place. And I think if the precious metals market understood this, the price of gold would be much higher than it is today.
Rates have been on the rise on just a percentage basis. We've had some of the sharpest increases in yields in the U.S. Treasury in years.
Yeah, well, you're talking about that's the market raising rates.
Yeah.
Because it thinks the Fed is going to raise them too. But the market, I believe, is wrong. What's going to cause the market to raise rates is going to be the realization that the Fed is way behind the inflation curve, that inflation is a much bigger problem than is generally acknowledged, and that it's going to run out of control. So eventually, interest rates are going to really skyrocket on the long end, and there's nothing the central banks are going to be able to do to contain that.
Well, higher rates typically a negative for stocks, U.S. equities, and somewhat for the precious metals. We did see higher rates in the 70s, though, and you still had your massive run in the precious metals. How do you expect the markets to react this time around?
Yeah, the enemy of the markets is not higher nominal rates, but higher real rates. So the metals market didn't respond to high rates until Volcker got in front of the curve and got rates up to 20%. Now, the ability of the U.S. Federal Reserve to do that again is non-existent based on the enormity of the debt and the short-term nature of that debt. So we do not have the ability to fight inflation successfully the way it was done in the 1970s, early 1980s. And so I think gold is just going to rise. The only question is how fast and by how much.
You're calling for a buy the rumor dollar, sell the dollar fact after a rate hike should it come to pass. That sounds like good news for commodities and precious metals. You've also gone on record noting that the U.S. dollar has had its run. Essentially what we saw, the stealth 9-10 month rally, was a result of that expectation or anticipation of the Fed allowing rates to climb.
Yeah, meanwhile, the U.S. economy is continuing to disappoint the bulls who have to constantly revise downward their forecasts as we get, all these numbers and misestimates. The one exception recently has been some of the housing sales data. But again, I think a lot of that is skewed. We did have, some very weak housing numbers in the winter, so we got a little bit of a boost. And I do think that a lot of the home buyers are trying to jump the gun, get ahead of the Fed. Everybody's talking about how rates are going to go up, which means mortgage rates. And so I think some people are trying to buy a house before the rates go up, and they can no longer afford the house or qualify for the house. Of course, if housing prices go down, that would help, but people usually don't expect that. But I think if you look at the real numbers on housing, they're still very weak. Home ownership rates are languishing at, 20 or 30-year lows, and rents keep rising. They're rising every year at rates that far exceed the CPI because Americans can't afford to buy, and so more and more are renting, and there's not enough rental supply, so the prices just keep on rising.
And I think we're also seeing a glut of inventory from institutions, hedge funds, et cetera, purchased up, foreclosures at fire sale prices over the, 2008, 2009, 2010. And I'm seeing inventory hit the market. I mean, if you take a look at realtybid.com, last time I saw that was 2008, 2009.
Most of this is still shadow inventory. Most of these houses are still not on the market, but that can change very quickly. Especially if the Fed were to raise rates, which is one of the reasons why they won't, is that would put more pressure on these speculators to put these empty houses on the market for sale. And of course, they would be coming to the market precisely as higher interest rates was making them less affordable for real buyers. So this is another bubble that the Fed has blown.
Tell us a bit more about the Greek drama. This Grexit Athens and its creditors are clearly caught in an impasse. They're taking an extension here. It looked like it was all over as of Monday. They're trying to keep the ball rolling. Ultimately, does Greece leave the EU? And what does that mean for the Eurozone?
I think it's better for the Eurozone if they leave. But of course, everybody is trying to convince them to stay. And you know, I said that the Greek politicians, you know, the way they get elected, rather, is to promise to fight back against the austerity and maybe leave the Eurozone. But once they're in power, practically speaking, that's not a viable option for them. So they basically can talk tough, but they've got to cave in. And, you know, and that's what they're doing in some respects. The deal that they floated doesn't involve any debt forgiveness. It doesn't bring an end to their so-called austerity. It does include some trivial window dressing type pension reform, which is really doesn't go far enough to really solve the problem. They do have tax hikes, which are going to actually worsen the problem. You've got tax hikes, the value added tax going up, but more importantly or more destructively, they're going to raise the income tax rate and they're going to impose a special new wealth tax. All that will end up increasing tax evasion, which is a problem there, and tax avoidance as more people, you know, try to move out of Greece. Then that just exacerbates the pressure on the economy as you whittle away the tax base and your employers. So this really extends the problem. It pushes off any kind of default into the future. That's why the German stock market had a big rally. That's why the euro sold off, because it means more money printing, to delay the inevitable. Gold actually declined as well. You know, it got back above 1,200 because of the Fed dovish talk about rates, but then it's back down around the 1180-ish. Because now the perception of a safe haven for Greece is no longer as appealing, as people say, oh, the Greek problem is over, so let's sell gold, as if gold had even rallied based on worries about Greece. So I think that this is a buying opportunity again in gold. I think Greece is a sideshow. You know, the main event is the U.S. and some of the other larger economies that have bigger problems than Greece. And so when people start focusing on that, you know, the safe haven bid is going to come back to gold in a big way.
The safe haven bid is coming back in a big way in the state of Texas. I mean, we've certainly heard of Venezuela, Switzerland, Netherlands, so many countries over the past few years that have started this repatriation theme. But now one of our own states wants its gold back. The Lone Star State is demanding. Is this just a symbolic event?
It's symbolic of the fact that there's a lack of trust in the Fed, and people are starting to worry that they might actually need their gold, and they don't want to be the ones that are told that it's not there. You know, you want to get your gold before the other people ask for theirs. So I think this is a trend that's going to gain some momentum, because the reality is, what if the Fed doesn't hold all the gold that it claims to hold? It's just like in any kind of a Ponzi scheme, right? You want to get your money out early while there's still some money to be had. Some of Bernie Madoff's initial investors got their money back, you know, but, you know, when they busted the whole scam, it was on the news, well, it was too late. So I think there are some people that want their gold. You know, that's why I recommend, you know, through Shift Gold, I tell people, store your own gold. Don't just trust it to some ETF. Have it in your hands. That's what the state of Texas wants. They don't want to trust a third party. They want their own gold.
Maybe another question down the road is whether or not this starts a trend. You know, we saw a few of the Western states, I don't know if maybe it was Utah, Nevada, a few of these states, New England state, come up with the idea we need to have some type of backing for our currency, a state-backed currency, something, silver-backed. If Texas and maybe a few other states, New York and California, Florida, Illinois, if they start to demand their gold back.
Yeah, and there's nothing, you know, that legally that prevents the states from establishing gold and silver as legal tender in payment of debts, and you know, because the Constitution says that no state shall make anything but gold and silver legal tender. So, you know, if they're going to make anything legal tender, it's got to be gold and silver. You know, and so that's, you know, that's what we've been doing. That's why, you know, I pioneered at my offshore bank the first ever gold and silver backed debit cards, which enable individuals to open up bank accounts with my bank, denominate those accounts in gold or silver, and then spend their gold and silver the way anybody else spends their dollars or euros or yen by accessing their debit card. You know, and so when you take your debit card and put it into an ATM machine or you swipe it at a cash register, you know, we take some of the gold out of your account in order to cover your transactions. So it lets individuals put themselves on the gold standard. People, if they want information on it, you can go to bankyourgold.com. But, you know, unfortunately, we don't offer that service to Americans, right, because of the U.S. laws. But what we are working on, and it should be ready maybe by the end of the year or early next year, is we are working on launching a gold-backed digital currency. And the way that digital currency will work is it will only account holders at my bank can buy the currency and redeem the currency for gold, but anybody can hold it, which would include Americans. So if one of my bank customers were to, let's say, buy $1,000 worth of gold and opt to take delivery in my gold-backed digital currency, once they had it, they can spend it in America. They can buy goods or services from an American who can then take ownership of that digital currency. They can hold it, they can save it to spend in the future. They just could not redeem it themselves, but they could buy something from a Canadian or a European who could then take that digital currency to my bank and redeem it in gold.
You know, it sounds like a gold Bitcoin. It's going to be a big hit, I'm sure.
Well, it'll spend like a Bitcoin, except it'll have the stability of gold. So you're not going to have to worry about, hey, what's this digital currency going to be worth? You can buy $1,000 worth of Bitcoins, and, you know, they could be worth a nickel, you know, in 5 years. You don't know what they're going to be worth. Yeah, but if you get one of my digital currencies and you get an ounce of gold worth of my digital currency, it's always going to be worth an ounce of gold, right? So if an ounce of gold is worth more in a year, then your digital currency is worth more. If an ounce of gold is worth less, then your digital currency is worth less. But it's a reliable store of value. You know, unlike Bitcoin, which can't store any value and it has no reliability.
Imagine if Russian citizens and Greek citizens, Cypriot citizens all had access to this service that you're referring to.
Yeah, people in Cyprus will be able to have accounts with my offshore bank. They'll be able to have gold and silver-backed debit cards. They'll be able to have digital currency backed by gold. There's nothing that stops them. And, of course, there's nothing that prevents other banks. Just because my bank is doing this, any bank could offer this service. It's just that they don't choose to do so. But it's not like I have to have any proprietary technology in order to do it. I mean, ultimately, there can be all sorts of gold-backed digital currencies circulating. There can be all sorts of banks that allow their depositors to save gold and silver versus a fiat currency. That could be the wave of the future. It's all about what the public wants. See, in a free market, right, the businesses satisfy the demands of the consumers. And when the consumers begin to demand real money, a reliable store of value, when they reject government fiat, then the free market is going to supply a solution. I'm already supplying it because I'm kind of on a leading edge of that. And so I want to get that market to myself, you know, because right now it's very small, but I do expect the market to grow over time.
In the sake of transparency, is this backed by physical gold or is this backed by futures contracts?
The actual physical gold that we store. You know, most of the gold that my bank stores is held at the Perth Mint in Australia. And we have an agreement with them where they actually hold our gold for us without any storage charges. And we pass on that free storage to our customers, which makes it all possible. You know, you buy some of these gold ETFs and the storage fees add up. I mean, it's kind of expensive to store your gold year after year. But we're able to do it without any storage fees, which really makes the program very attractive. And of course, you know, gold is not being printed, you know, like all these fiat currencies. And it used to be that if you had fiat currency in the bank, you could get a high rate of interest. Well, now you get no interest. And in some countries, it's negative interest.
But help us understand the mechanism behind this. Let's say that a big institutional client says, hey, I want to join Peter Schiff's gold-backed digital currency. And we're talking about, let's say, $1 billion. Okay, flows into it. What physically happens at the vault here at the Perth?
Let's say we collected $1 billion in dollars or in the equivalent of dollars in euros and yen and pounds or whatever currencies we got. We would then buy that gold from the Perth Mint, and the Perth Mint would warehouse the gold, you know, at its storage facility.
So you've got a symbiotic relationship going on here.
The reason the Perth Mint can store the gold for free is because they use the gold as part of their daily business. So it's like a funding. It's like they get gold inventory at no cost. They just have to protect it. You know, it's an unallocated program.
Any parting thoughts there?
I wrote about this, in my book, Crash Proof. Initially, I said, hey, this is what's going to happen. You know, banks are going to start to eventually offer depositors the ability to save and spend gold using a debit card. That's what, you know, kind of solves the problem of what makes a gold standard viable in the modern age, because it makes it as easy to spend gold as any other currency. But, you know, nobody really launched it until I did in 2012. It's interesting, the idea is gaining popularity. There's this service called BitGold that went public in Canada like a month or so ago. And they're hyping up the idea as if they thought of it themselves. You know, they're luring in a lot of unsuspecting investors because they're buying the stock with a market cap of over $200 million, despite the fact that, you know, they don't earn any money. They just use their inflated stock to buy gold money, which was Jim Turk's company. And so they now have a lot of gold that they do store. But, Jim Kirk was losing money over at Gold Money. So they spent about 50 million Canadian worth of their stock to buy a company that's losing money. But they're basically copying my ideas and my concepts. They haven't even, put them into implementation yet, really. I mean, they don't even have a card program. But one of the things that we're going to be launching, too, with our improved platform later in the year, when we basically fully integrate gold into our banking platform and our bank software looks at gold as a currency, you know, our bank customers also have brokerage accounts. And so, you know, we'll be able to let our customers buy stock and pay for it in gold, you know, buy bonds and pay for it in gold. I mean, they'll be able to use their gold like anybody else uses their, you know, their dollars. The difference is the gold's not going to lose value over time.
I mean, imagine having a debit card that's backed by gold. In other words, instead of a flimsy, nonsensical plastic gold card, you have a bullion gold card.
It's an actual gold card. It's not just the color gold. It's actually backed by real gold. But, you know, you keep it in your wallet. It's plastic like any other debit card. But, you know, if one of my customers has $50,000 worth of gold with me, they have $50,000 worth of gold in their wallet at all times. And it's not that my customers are anxious to spend their gold. They'd rather spend their fiat currency that's losing value. They don't necessarily want to spend their gold that's maintaining or increasing its value. But if there's an emergency, if somebody needs part of that gold at any moment, they can use it. You know, it's just you have all the liquidity at your fingertips, but you have it all stored safely, you know, offshore.
Tell people more about the books that you provide, the services that you have, as well as Euro Pacific Capital and ShiftGold.com.
Yeah, ShiftGold is my U.S.-based precious metals company. Anybody in the U.S. Or anywhere in the world, actually, who is desirous of owning physical gold and silver and having it in your possession can give us a call. We also don't rip anybody off. We don't do numismatics or any of these so-called collectibles. Very, very low prices, among the lowest anywhere online. So you can check us out at shiftgold.com. For people who are not American, who are interested in opening up bank accounts and having these debit cards, you can go to bankyourgold.com. It will take you directly to the page on my website of Europac Bank. Also, you know, we have a referral program which is open to Americans. So if you're an American and you help us get customers, we do pay $50 in a referral. So there's a way to, you know, become a referring agent and make a little spare change for helping us get bank customers. And for people who want brokerage services, if you have bigger portfolios, if you want to do more than just buy gold, if you want to access global stock markets to buy stocks in the countries that I feel are in the best shape economically and to try to get the best overall returns, you want to go to europac.com, EUROPAC.com, and check out our services and talk to one of our brokers. And don't forget, you know, listen to my video blogs. I post them on my YouTube channel, The Shift Report. My podcast at Shift Radio. You can also listen to that on, you know, all kinds of iTunes and Stitcher and various places that host podcasts, or on my website, shiftradio.com. I do those podcasts. I'll probably be recording one a little later today, so I usually do a couple a week. And I've got plenty of books out there, I think six in all, the most recent being The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country, the revised edition. So you can start with that one.
Peter Schiff, we appreciate your time, and thank you.
Thank you.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Louis Nevalier runs Nevalier & Associates. He's the editor of four leading stock advisory newsletters. Welcome back.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, thanks. In your latest Nevalier & Associates report, Market Mail, you examine the market leadership. And let me let you run with the ball and give people an idea of this rotation you see in the market.
We're still in the midst of what we like to call a seismic shift. And what that is that's where the top end of the S&P 500 and much of the leadership is sick. And that's what happens when a strong dollar destroys your profits. Almost half the S&P sales are outside of America. So what's been happening is the S&P sales are now flat as a pancake, and many multinationals have negative sales growth. And their earnings are up 1.4 in the first quarter, but that was only because they bought back a tremendous amount of stock. They would have been down without the buyback. So the market has gravitated to anything that has real sales and earnings when the S&P doesn't. That is largely domestic stocks. That's Kroger, that's Southwest Airlines, that's Target, that's CVS Health, other healthcare companies like Anthem, United Health Group, Cigna. You know, it's also Lowe's, Home Depot. But there's more domestic companies in the mid and small cap arena right now than large cap arena. They're doing better. All I can tell you is the other day the market was down 108 points and we were up with literally over 100 stocks in a very diversified fund. So stock picking is absolutely crucial now. Obviously tech, healthcare, some consumer durables, consumer staples are the strongest sectors, but I'd rather be picking stocks and sectors right now. It's a pure stock picking market.
Anyone who follows the markets can recognize when the Fed is tightening, you know, rates are going up, the market is stagnant for the most part. But when rates decline, we tend to have a rally. And, you know, it's interesting that just as the Fed eased up and started to loosen up and become more dovish was right around 2009. And here we are flatlining since 2009, you could say 6-year rally at least. But with higher rates, if we look at this track record over the past, it tends to not bode so well over the next few years. Do you see that impacting the markets, or are things so robust here in our domestic economy that they'll just shrug off higher rates?
Well, like most things, it's compound complex. Obviously, what we're all watching is the incredible surge in bond yields in the last, actually since the beginning of April. I think last I looked, the 10-year treasury was 187 at the beginning of April and hit 2.5 here recently. But the German 10-year bond went from 5 basis points, 0.05%, to over 100 basis points, 1%. So the question is this resurging economies around the world? Is it due to the Greece conundrum that they're all getting nervous over there? Because Greece is obviously going to have another managed default, most likely. They've made a couple payments to the IMF and they'd like to make another one, but then restructure everything else. And of course, they have a problem in Greece. There really is no leadership. They're at the point where they have to cut their pensions because they can't tax their way out of this mess. At least that's what the IMF recommended, who's, you know, basically driving the bus. So it's interesting. We've had a lot of very good economic news for the second quarter. The first quarter, although it was negative, it was held back by the West Coast port strike. Consumers were cautious first quarter, but, you know, based on retail sales, it's coming up a storm and business investments going up. You know, we've depleted inventories in the last three quarters, so they have to rebuild inventories second quarter. So second quarter GDP is shaping up to be really good. Going back to the Fed, their conundrum is is there is no inflation, so they don't really have to raise rates to fight inflation. And furthermore, Janet Yellen's a labor economist. And although we had a very good May payroll report, in January, February, March, they revised payroll down. And the reason they did that is most of the jobs are created in America are temp. And when some ambitious person gets two temp jobs, they get counted twice, so they have downward revisions. There were also problems with the household survey. So the job market is not hitting all cylinders. You've had multiple people from the Fed say they shouldn't raise rates, like Stanley Fischer, the vice chairman. He says because of the weaker global growth. You've had the presidents of Chicago, New York, Boston, Minneapolis also they shouldn't raise rates. I think the most telling thing is Janet Yellen is not planning to be at Jackson Hole, Wyoming for the Kansas City Fed conference in August. And now everyone in the world that is a central banker economist goes to Jackson Hole. First, nice place, great time of year. Janet Yellen will be conspicuously absent. I think she's going to be hiding. The IMF has told us not to raise rates until next year. Of course, next year is an election year, so they don't want to raise rates anyway. So I'm in the camp that they will not be raising rates in the next 2 years. However, I did hedge myself, and I was on CNBC the other day saying if market rates go up, we'll be forced to follow, but market rates have not gone up on the short end. So as you mentioned, this week's Fed minutes are going to be fast.
It could be a one-and-done scenario where they just simply save face. We've done it, raised rates, and they may not even give any guidance. It might be one-and-done, and we don't find out about that until, you know, spring of 2016. You know, if this were an option, it would be decaying rapidly. I think it's interesting that you're the first guest on our show to point out the, as you say, conspicuous absence of our Fed chair at the Jackson Hole, Wyoming annual meeting, because this is a key, a seminal event in the economic world. I mean, quite an honor, so it's kind of surprising not to see head of economics, the global leader. But I'd like to get a few more thoughts here before we move on. This Greek situation, it's setting a precedent. Nevertheless, the economy is tiny, and it's roughly 3 to 5% of the entire EU. So what are they really worrying about? I mean, do you think that this is maybe a smaller issue, a non-issue, compared to the way the press is framing it up?
The bottom line is we in America have our own issues. We have Puerto Rico, we have the state of Illinois. And the easiest way you fix a lot of these issues is you just make the stock market go higher. Obviously, it does trickle down eventually. Obviously, a lot of the pensions in America are tied to the stock market. I think the Fed is purposely goosing the stock market. You can just tell in the buybacks. You know, last year, they bought back $904 billion between buybacks and dividends. So they returned $904 billion to shareholders. In the first quarter, it was $247 billion in buybacks. That's almost $1 trillion a year. Last I looked, the stock market's only worth $20 trillion. So when you're buying back 5% of your float a year, that's just incredible. The other thing is when you have low interest rates and low PE ratios, companies continue to borrow to buy their stock back. Clearly, the multinationals that have the sales problem can borrow overseas extra cheap, as Apple has in the last couple quarters, and just continue to retire their stock. This stock market has been going up on no. It's eerily silent. I think buybacks and cash flow are a big thing. And one last point, the market yields 1.9%, and it's tax advantage at 23.8. So if you're a wealthy person, you can put your money in the bank and earn 23.4 taxes and be taxed at 43.4% and get next to nothing. Or you can just buy the stocks and get a higher yield and a tax advantage rate. So I think the foundation of the market is good. I think we need some better leadership. It's coming from domestic stocks. You know, the third and fourth year of a presidential election campaign are very good for the market because all these candidates are starting to see that now as candidates emerge, and it'll be full force next year. The final comment I'd have is when Yellen went in front of Congress, I think it was 4 months ago, Senator Schumer was begging her not to raise rates. There is going to be immense political pressure not to raise rates. And that's just because of the student loan crisis and all kinds of other issues. So interesting conundrum we're in, but as long as rates remain low, the market melts in.
I'd also add that we haven't discussed the dollar rally, an important component of that multinational scenario you laid out. I mean, obviously, as our dollar is relatively strong on a global basis, it tends to curtail their sales and make us a bit less competitive on a worldwide scale. So it's another, I think, key point that could be capping some of those S&P gains. However, this lower energy situation with crude oil, obviously, at some of the lowest levels in years. years. That clearly can be an impetus for the economy, especially summertime. You know, it tends to boost spending and whatnot, and not to mention consumer spending.
I think it's my opinion the dollar remains strong till our rates are as low as the rest of the world. We have Japan pumping, the European Central Bank pumping, money sloshes in America. My kid goes to some fancy school on the West Coast. Lots of Asian money coming in, moving here, bringing capital. I live on the East Coast. We have lots of Europeans, Russians, other people bringing in, buying real estate, putting capital. This is what negative rates does. Negative rates forces people to act differently. So we see them buying condos in Miami, sight unseen, 650 a foot for a concrete shell that you have to finish out. We see them buying cars. We see them buying art. No one wants to have an asset that's depreciating, and cash is depreciating. Now, going back to metals, gold was the best performing commodity last year. If you were an American and bought gold, you know, you were treading water. You were a European and bought gold, you made money because your currency went down. I don't know. If I lived in Europe, I think gold would look pretty good right now because of the, it's priced in dollars. So I get that currency tailwind, and I'd rather have something that I can trust versus central banks just pumping relentlessly. So it's an interesting time we're in. Of course, the more uncertain it is, the more people should have in gold, platinum, things. So we've been encouraging people up their allocation.
Any contact information you'd like to leave with listeners, or perhaps just give us an idea, an overview?
Well, I think the main thing is our research is online, available free through NavalierGrowth.com and Grader, as well as the Stock Grader. It's it's called Portfolio Grader. Grade your dividend stocks and dividend grader and grade your growth stocks on the portfolio grader. That's again, NavalierGrowth.com. Our research is free. The main thing is in January, only the top 22% of stocks were worth buying. Today, it's only the top 14%. I know in the S&P, the top 50 stocks in the S&P, only 18 are any good. 12 are growth stocks, 6 are dividend stocks. So narrow market right now, actually 12 are growth stocks and 4 are dividend stocks. So that gets us up there. But yeah, I can tell you, very narrow market environment right now. It's either you own the creme de la creme or you suffer. And I think this is where we are. I think the market will broaden out and get better because we'll have some good economic news in the second quarter. But the leadership is very, very narrow. So you have to own the creme de la creme here. Index funds are not safe, okay? They are cap-weighted, cap-biased, and the dollar is destroying indexing. So the folks in McGraw-Hill keep the S&P 500 are probably starting to get real nervous.
We had Ralph Acampora on the show last week, and he pointed out, you know, we haven't had a 10% correction in our major U.S. equities indices several years, and we're due for a 10%, and that wouldn't necessarily equate the end of a bull market. It would just be a natural, you know, speed bump on the way to higher prices. Are you also in that camp that the bull market likely has further to run?
The S&P has not had a correction for over 1,331 days, the last I looked, 1,340 days now. But we did have a pretty serious correction in October of last year. I still remember October 9th, they hit the semiconductors 12% that day, and then they came roaring back, got good earnings announced. I remember them hitting the airline stocks as we were all going to be dead from Ebola in 60 days, and they took off. A little more volatile now. And this is what we call rotational correction. This is the best kind of correction. The other day, the market was down 108 points. I was up, even in 100 stock portfolios, because especially semis and data security firms like Palo Alto Networks, Vasco Data Securities, a lot of health stocks are acting really well. There's merger mania underway. It's going to be fine. It's only the market rotates. The other thing is, any market gets hit, all the bargain hunters come out. The market yields more than the bank, so there's a lot of people chasing yield. I think we're going to be fine. We do have these high-frequency systems, though, that do manipulate the market to a certain degree. What goes up today tends to go down tomorrow. So you just have to kind of get used to it and realize that it tends to seesaw a little higher today, and that's what's going to happen. But, you know, like I have a fund I manage. I never buy stocks when they're up. Never. I mean, I wait. I take powerful stocks and only buy them on down. That's how I do things.
You know, I mean, this doesn't leave a lot of alternatives for the typical portfolio, so you should see capital flows following this 30-year bond market rally steadily directed into U.S. equities, as also Ralph Acampora pointed out. So it's just maybe another piece of the puzzle to keep people from getting overly concerned by any shakeout by the weak hands.
And the good thing is America is an oasis. Foreign capital is pouring into America. We're getting all these people bring their capital. They pay taxes. I mean, this is a really good thing. So we're going to grow our way out of our problems. You know, we got an election coming up.
Louis Navalier, we always appreciate your thoughts. Please keep up the great work. And I want to encourage everyone, if you haven't signed up for any of these services, try the free Market Mail. And that way you can get started. It doesn't cost you anything. You can see some of the great information and advice that you'll receive. Make a decision from there. So let's get started. The Market Mail is your first step towards getting some great advice. Louis Navalier, thanks so much.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
It's time for the Q&A hotline, opening up the phone line.
Hey, Chris, love the show. I was wondering if you could touch a little bit on the rent-to-purchase ratio, where you said 100 times rent would be fair value on a home. Also, we had some exciting years in the PMs, but now it seems to be floundering in the chowder the past 4 years when you think the precious metals would be perking up. And finally, with 86% of adults contracted to drive, what do you think about the auto parts retailers that are strong, the mandatory inspections and such? Once again, love the show. Give thanks.
Well, the first caller asks about the price-to-rent ratio, and this, of course, is the average list price divided by the average rent multiplied by 12 for 12 months of the year. You know, I prefer the rule of 100. This is a basic rule. It's a rule of thumb, a guideline. Take the monthly rent that you're paying now, and if you're looking for homes, you can multiply that rent by 100. That gives you a general benchmark in your area for a fair price. So let's say you're paying roughly $1,000 a month in rent, multiplied by 100. It's obviously $100,000. Let's say it's a 3-bed, 2-bath calculation that can help you make snap decisions on houses. Now, if you live in a very nice area or it has mountain views or beach views, you can adjust it higher. You might make it a rule of 110 or a rule of 120, quality living arrangements. But for the most part, it's just a guide. And right now, I would be hard-pressed to find an RV in my area for the rental amount that we're paying in this rental location. I would argue that mortgages are still extremely overpriced in my area by about a factor of 40 to 50%. When is that going to change? Well, I'll leave that up to the listeners. Probably require another big market smackdown. But I'm seeing a lot of shadow inventory hitting the markets right now, and I suspect we will see more as the years progress, especially when the hedge funds and related institutions that bought up all of those foreclosures at super low prices back in 2008 to 2010. As they start to unload their inventories, I think you'll find incredible bargains. So people need to keep their eyes open, and I hope you'll keep your powder dry. That's what we're suggesting for everybody. As for your gold and silver comments, you know, the precious metals, they just remain the quintessential portfolio insurance. When every other asset fails, gold and silver lined lifeboats will save the day. Take, for instance, Dr. Ron Paul's latest video this week where he claims that millions of investors are unprepared. They're going to be wiped out in this coming financial maelstrom. The 7-year cycle noted by Martin Armstrong, the Shemitah 7-year cycle from the Hebrew a heritage, and the fact there hasn't even been really a 10% stock market correction in several years. I can't think of a more important asset class to add to every portfolio right now. Of course, I'm a bit, but I still suggest at least a 25% allocation for everyone. I think that's sufficient to cover more than any financial carnage that might unfold. Younger investors are encouraged maybe to increase that amount. Senior investors maybe decrease it a bit, since investment income is such an important part, a passive part of that retirement income source. I'd also recommend tinkering around with a simple correlation matrix. Don't take my advice. Don't take my word for anything. You know, investigate yourself. You can go online, type in correlation matrix or correlation matrices, and you will find free and easy opportunities to just build a little portfolio of your favorite ETFs, and then you can add the ticker symbols GLD, SLV, and CEF to the matrix just to see how volatility declines, your risk declines markedly, and your expected return goes up. The precious metals allow investors to increase your risk asset levels without increasing overall risk. And as every student of finance knows, higher risk can equal higher reward when managed scientifically. Gold and silver are they're just the bedrock, the cornerstone of a portfolio. Would we try to build a house without a foundation first? I mean, it would crumble and fall to pieces in doing all of our effort, time, and money. Similarly, investors need to change their ontologies. Stop asking, how much money am I going to make on that exciting new stock, and ask, how much will I lose without a precious metals foundation in my portfolio first? Here's an example. Each week, I put up a new Alpha Stocks portfolio. I've done this for many years, 230 editions now over the years. And then before that, it was 10 or 15 years. And I've done this now for over 15 years. We maximize overall return. We minimize losses. All of my readers have access to these. I regularly offer Alpha Stocks newsletter subscribers portfolios with expected returns of 30 to 50% annually and zero expected losses. Let's keep in mind, proviso here, it is an optimized portfolio. But it still gives investors that peace of mind of knowing that their funds are being maximized and losses minimized. If you haven't already, let me suggest signing up. You can do so risk-free for your first month. You're not satisfied after 30 days? We'll refund and cancel your account.
Hey, Chris. John, San Diego, California. Sunny San Diego. I heard you speak recently with different guests, like, can't remember exactly which ones, Ralph Acampora or whatever. The U.S. economy is doing better. It's very solid. And even the official statistics coming from the government say that we had 0.7, okay, growth in the economy, which is nonsense, because if you factor in inflation, it's actually negative growth. And we all know the government statistics cannot be believed. They are totally false. They're there to mislead people. Now, maybe you are taking the tack that it's only the impression that counts. What other people who want to be conned, because this is what this is. This stock market bubble is a con game, just like federal central banking is a con game, just like fiat money is a con game. And as far as technical analysis goes, it's irrelevant these days because the markets are so manipulated. They have their own technicians that are watching the market, the manipulators. So it's absolutely useless to try to, and this is, we got a demographic problem. 80 million baby boomers are reducing their spending. And unless you're thinking that maybe they're going to bring in 100 million immigrants to take up the slack, I don't think so. Keep up the good work.
Next up, John from San Diego. He's concerned about the positive spin on the official economic numbers. Hi, John. Good to hear from you. I think most of our guests share your sentiments. Although the official unemployment is near the Fed's target and the official inflation rate remains tame, the middle and working classes are struggling. But there are many components to that story. Firstly, thanks to NAFTA, over 5 million manufacturing jobs have been shipped offshore. While we all benefit from lower cost imports, the sea change has had a devastating effect on the typical American. Labor participation is abysmal. This suggests that tens of millions of able-bodied Americans, well, they've simply given up looking for work or accepted temporary or part-time work alternatives. Now, it's easy to massage the numbers when you have a carte blanche opportunity with the U.S. Treasury. You simply distribute 50 million food stamp debit cards and voila. Problem fixed, and don't forget to keep the entitlement programs cranking out free money, which works its way throughout the economy eventually. Of course, the entire edifice will eventually grind to a screeching halt, but who cares? Everybody will be retired by then, right? At least on paper, the economic conditions have recovered a bit, and the stock market is regularly making new 118-year highs, at least in the Dow Jones average. I think the big Achilles heel, though, will catch most investors off guard. And that's the bond market implosion. The 30-year uptrend is reversing and will likely head downhill for at least a decade or two. This will require rebalancing of trillions of dollars in market accounts and institutional accounts such as pension funds, some of which will flow to equities and some to the precious metals eventually. And once that bottom is firmly in place, it should be the perfect stage for a new rally. All right. Thanks, John. And
hi, Chris. It almost seems like there's some people in the corners of the financial world that are ignoring reality, that the economy is floundering, it is not growing. Even the official statistics put it at, what, 0.7% growth? And we all know that the government statistics are out and out lies. They're cramming money into the pockets of Wall Street stock speculators, and they are going to destroy us. We are being destroyed right now. If the market was unfettered and free to its own devices, there is some validity to technical analysis, but not under the current circumstances. It is unsustainable. It is blowing up. It's in the process of blowing up. It's just that people don't realize it right now. Yeah, I know you think there's another rally coming. Maybe you're right. Maybe we haven't topped out yet. We could always have that huge parabolic spike to 40,000 Dow.
And another question from John. You know, John, while I agree with some of your points, I think it might be a bit of an oversimplification, at least regarding the stock market. There's more going on here than meets the eye. With unemployment at lower levels, IRAs and pension funds receive billions more each month that must be directed into the stock market. Now, while I agree with you that the numbers are massaged, and we all know many, many more people looking for work than is officially acknowledged, we do have to admit that foreign capital is fleeing the EU in search of more stable conditions, and where better to go amid this Grexit drama than the United States, especially with many other countries likely to follow the Greek step into this debt nightmare. So the U.S. remains an important safe haven, at least for the time being. Then, as I mentioned in the last message, the bond bull market is over. Most of the smart money is aware of this, and much of those funds are flowing into equities and related funds. It doesn't hurt to have about $5 trillion on the Fed's balance sheet to help out. Add into the mix, many of those funds end up in corporate coffers, which promptly are directed into the corporate bonds, but now those bonds are less attractive with rate hikes imminent, so those companies are pouring even more of that money that was earmarked for their own bonds into their own shares, potentially sending the stock market to even higher levels. So, in my view, any serious correction in the U.S. equities will remain a buying opportunity for the next year or two. All right, thanks for all your questions and comments and opening up the mailbag. First up, Vidya, longtime listener and friend of the show, says that he's interested, very interested in Peter Schiff's idea of a gold-backed Bitcoin. That's his gold digital currency. He's excited by the fact that after a stock sell-off, that the stock market will recover much more briskly than most people are anticipating, creating a great opportunity. Well, hi, Vidya. I'm glad you're interested in Peter Schiff's gold backed currency, and particularly the gold-backed debit card that he's offering. I think it's a really sharp idea. As for the U.S. equities, yeah, as I just mentioned with the last caller, clearly I think that this stock market rally has further legs to go, and I think that any major sell-off of 10 to 20% will represent an incredible buying opportunity. Eventually, I'm on board with everybody that it's getting to frothy levels, but until we see the Fed completely curtail its QE operations, I think there'll be ample liquidity to support stronger corporate profits in the years to come. So we appreciate all your questions and comments, and we'd like everybody to call in. You can do so. It's no longer toll-free, but be sure and keep that in mind when you're calling us. But you can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that number, 1-206-6665-370. The number again, 1-206-6665-370. 866-65-370. Yeah, and we'd like for you to jot the number down, put it on a post-it pad, and or program it into your phones or cell phones. 1-206-66-65-370. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek. Stay with us. Your mining quiz for the day, compliments of Gold Seek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.